Welcome to the CenturyLink Labs podcast with your host, Lucas Carlson. From Docker and Linux containers to programming languages and web frameworks, we interview technology and thought leaders around the world every week. This week's interview is brought to you by CenturyLink Cloud, the world's fastest self-service enterprise-grade cloud.
Hello, this is Lucas Carlson from the CenturyLink Labs podcast. Today I've got some really fun guests from Red Hat to talk about lots of really neat technology that they're building around OpenShift, around Docker, around GearD, around Kubernetes. Really interesting conversation that we're about to have. And Krish is the director of OpenShift strategy. He's been a friend of mine for a long time. We've been interacting. We've hung out lots of times, and we got to know each other in the platform as a service space back when I was running AppFog, and he was an analyst, and really smart dude. This guy was one of the smartest analysts I've ever met. He really understood technology, understood how things fit together. And when I found out that he was joining Red Hat, it was no surprise. It was like, okay, I get it. He's going from a watching state to a state of participating in this ecosystem. So I'm really happy to have him on as a guest to talk about some of the strategy and where things are going with technology in general. But we also have a really special guest, Clayton Coleman, who is a leader in the GearD. He's one of the leaders of that project, and he's going to tell us more about the GearD project, which is a really cool project. If you were at DockerCon, you couldn't miss it. It was a really awesome presentation. But he's also one of the first outsiders to get committer rights to the Kubernetes project. So we get to learn more about Kubernetes, how it fits in with the whole ecosystem, how it fits in with platform as a service, and where things are going with that too. So I just can't wait to get started and pick these guys' brains. I hope you enjoy this conversation. So, guys, could you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. My name is Krish. I used to be an industry analyst, as Lucas said. I was looking at the industry from 30,000 feet. So sort of like, I think Red Hat thought maybe it's better to get somebody who looks at from 30,000 feet to give them some perspective on where everything is headed. But at Red Hat, I've been helping team with the messaging OpenShift as well as like, in general, going and talking to the people in the industry about where everything is headed, like my own perspective on where things are headed, which sort of matches with the Red Hat strategy going forward, and I also help with the team on strategy and all that partnerships and stuff like that. So yeah, that's what I'm doing right now. But the key thing is like it's good to go to the side where you get things done than criticize from outside. So yeah, I'm happy about it.
Great. Tell us about yourself, Clayton, your background.
Sure. So right now I'm the lead engineer for OpenShift, one of the two lead engineers. I've been focused for the past year at least on kind of looking at next directions, where we want to go with the product, working with some of the open source projects that we've tried to spin up around Docker and that sort of community. Before that, I did most of the user interface on OpenShift, so I ran the user experience side of things, the website, the console. And I actually come from a user experience background. UI design and building out UIs. I worked with IBM for about 10 years doing collaboration software and software that was web-focused, you know, from the time when Java apps were using 99% of all the available memory on the system, and building an HTML UI involved things like blink tags and marquee tags. So come a long way to Docker, that's for sure.
Yes, it has. And it seems like OpenShift has come quite a long way, too. OpenShift 3, which has a really cool code name, is OpenShift Origin the same thing as OpenShift 3?
So Origin is the name of the open source side of the OpenShift family. So when we were open sourcing OpenShift, we wanted to make sure that the community really had a name. So Origin really is the community around OpenShift, the folks who help us get things set up, who build new cartridges, who deploy it, who contribute all sorts of plugins and extensions. And it's the developers of OpenShift as well, the people inside and outside of Red Hat who make those contributions. And so when we started to put together OpenShift 3, and we really wanted to simplify and get down to basics, you know, this is the name of the project. You know, Origin is OpenShift, and we want to make it absolutely clear from the beginning that you know, we as a company, as Red Hat, and as the people working on OpenShift today, we're part of the open source community, right? Like, Red Hat, everything in Red Hat's come from the open source community, and anything that hasn't should be and will be. And that's really our focus, is pulling things, the best things from the communities that other people and other companies are working on.
Got it. So OpenShift 3 is based on OpenShift Origin.
It would probably be accurate to say OpenShift 3 is the third architectural revision for OpenShift. And Origin is the community and the open source version of it. So when we, our products like OpenShift Online, OpenShift Enterprise, some of the folks out there in the community who run their own distributions of OpenShift, like GitHub Cloud, each of them may choose their own names, but they're all based around Origin.
Yeah, to add some context, like OpenShift has three major pods. One is OpenShift Origin, which is the upstream community. It's like Fedora for RHEL. Like, so that's where all the development goes on. Then we have OpenShift Online, where we sort of test out our own code while also serving our customers. Then once everything is like well-tested and packaged, then we push it off to OpenShift Enterprise, which is what we sell to enterprise customers.
Got it. And so how many people are using OpenShift right now? What's the community like?
So we have a really large community. You know, I could probably, off the top of my head, I know of at least like 30 or 40 different people who are deploying Origin itself in the open community. And I know there's a lot of others who I actually never get to see. Most of the communication that we do in the upstream communities is around people who are deploying OpenShift, what we would call OpenShift Origin V5, or are we on V6? We're on V6 now, I think. Which is really the full upstream, the head people deploy from it, test things out, run it inside their, you know, for their team or for their company, and try to give things a kick or try things out, and then contribute back when they have bugs and fixes and so forth. And then definitely OpenShift Online and OpenShift Enterprise both have very significant communities of people who are using them and contributing them as well.
Got it. And so OpenShift Online, is that like the Cloud Foundry trial program, or is it meant for applications that you can do more with? It seems like the Cloud Foundry trial is more about trying it out rather than actually using it for production. Is that the same for OpenShift Online?
No, it's more like Heroku. Like, we have customers using OpenShift Online for their production needs too. It's not just like a 30-day trial or something which you just try out and then go and buy something else. We push it as a standalone online offering based on the OpenShift code which enterprise customers will deploy on-premise. So it is used for both test and dev and test purposes as well as production. The large number of developers and startups use it for pushing their apps and even making money out of it. And we also have enterprise customers testing out using OpenShift Online for their needs. I would say that we have more than 1.8 million applications running on top of it, and we have many paid customers. So
wow.
People are making money out of it and sort of like using it to support in their entrepreneurial activities.
That's amazing. That's a very big number.
Yeah. And a focus for us with OpenShift Online has always been having a really compelling way of trying out OpenShift. You know, regardless of whether you're going to stand up your own Origin deployment, we know a lot of people who come in and they try out OpenShift Online because it's a, you know, it's a quick and easy experience to try out PaaS. A lot of people who come to PaaS, you know, most of the people in the software community still are pretty getting up to speed with the idea of someone else running their software for them, for trading that control potentially for a lot of flexibility and ease of use. And so people try out OpenShift Online really quickly from a number of different areas and then get more involved in OpenShift Origin or decide that they want to run something like OpenShift Enterprise themselves.
Got it. So some people have made some pretty you know, significant claims that OpenShift isn't mature yet, that it isn't scalable, that it isn't really a product that is usable. Those are some pretty severe claims. Can you comment on these claims?
I would rather avoid commenting on anything, any specific claim by any of the competitors, but I would say that if you are thinking about OpenShift, you should talk about the customers who have spoken out in public about how they use OpenShift. Cisco, FICO, Boeing spoke about it in one of the Red Hat events in Palo Alto. So all these customers are using it in their production environments. So if it is not mature, why are these large companies to use OpenShift for their needs? So it's more like a rhetorical, competitive positioning than anything serious. If we don't get into these kind of claims and counterclaims, we would rather let our customers speak about it. So we have public video links to all the customer presentations, and anybody could check it out anytime.
Makes sense.
One of the things I wanted to say, you know, we think about what OpenShift 2 is, and OpenShift 2 really represents, it's something that we, you know, we've been working on OpenShift for almost 5 years now, and a lot of the ideas in OpenShift were about taking things that already worked in the open source community and bringing them to end users. So OpenShift uses Apache, we use many of the core components that ship with CentOS and RHEL, like we use packages that support versions of software that companies are deploying in production today all over the world. And one of the focuses for OpenShift was always to make it an easy transition into the PaaS space for all of the administrators out there who needed to be able to get into Apache and run a custom Apache module in front of their applications. You know, there's a huge base of people out in the world who don't know about PaaS, who aren't following the latest, they don't even know what Docker is yet. And part of the goal with OpenShift was always to be a bridge from the old world to the new world, to bring people flexibility, but not to force them to have to change everything up front. And as we talk about, as we'll talk later about the new versions of OpenShift, we're now starting to get ready to really move into that next stage where we say, okay, let's move forward a bigger step.
Yeah, and also with regards to your question, I would like to answer specifically about application scaling. When I was the industry analyst, for me, the real definition of PaaS is infrastructure scaling with the platform to meet the needs of applications. So I would say OpenShift is one of the very few platforms where real application scaling is available. Whereas many other platforms, it's more about infrastructure scaling. Whereas in OpenShift, you can scale applications while also managing the infrastructure scaling using the tools you already have in your company. So I would say that is a big differentiator for OpenShift.
Got it. Well, with 1.8 million people using it, that seems like scale to me. So one of the things that I've always admired was how quickly Red Hat jumped into the Docker ecosystem and said, this is important and we want to contribute to it. Can you tell us why you made that decision so early on and made that move and commitment to the Docker world?
Sure. So it was, I remember there was a Stack Overflow question in, I want to say it was April of last year, and someone said, what's the difference between OpenShift and Docker? And I went in and answered, the question. We've been using containers. I talked about taking technologies where, we use OpenShift today, we use containerization technology based around SE Linux and standard Linux user process isolation. So my processes are running as my user, they can't see yours. And it was always about taking the things that worked at the time. But what Docker has really done an amazing job of is take a number of technologies that were starting to work well in the kernel. In some cases, you're still pushing the boundaries. User namespaces have been a continual source of problems so far. But we're trying to take, Docker's taken all of the technologies, originally on LXC and now directly to the through libcontainer in the kernel, and packaged them up in a way that made sense. And it added that extra bit on top of having a way to easily distribute images. And I know there's people out there in the community who will say, every time you download a Docker image, you're basically giving someone root access to your machine. I think what people missed is that of all of the things we have about VMs today, VMs do things great. They're a great way to run stuff. VMs aren't quite the fundamental thing that you're trying to deal with. What you really want is your software. You don't need hardware drivers. You don't need network drivers for your software. That's a lower level of concern. And Docker really made that step where they separated out the user space, the things that actually matter in an application and that abstraction that the kernel provides, and they said everything below that stays with the Linux box it's on, and everything above that is what gets distributed around. And I think that it was obvious, you know, right off the bat that this was a new way of solving the old problem that we've always had with packages and install scripts and configuration management. Maybe not solving it completely. You know, there'll always be room for a whole, it's always a spectrum of solutions. But it really captured both easy to use and an easy way to distribute software. And you know, right from the get-go, it was like, well, this is going to blow up. It's going to be huge. And so we tried to get involved early in the community and work with the Docker upstream, the folks at Docker, to really have a great story for administrators. I talked before about, you know, we're trying to bring technology, at Red Hat, we're trying to bring technology that the open source community is using to a wide range of people and make it easy to consume. And Docker may be easy to consume part, great, but, you know, getting it packaged and working on reliability, performance, stability, security, kernel bug fixes that make Docker easy to use. And, you know, at the end of the day, being able to turn around and offer something in a distribution like Fedora or CentOS or RHEL, a very coherent, well-put-together package that can meet the demands that administrators have when they're running all of their packaged application in it. So it was a no-brainer for us, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay. Clayton laid out the technological reasons for doing it. From a philosophical angle, I would say that open source is in the DNA of Red Hat. So we are comfortable working with any open source project, let it be OpenStack or Docker. You will be able to get in and we'll be able to contribute and also make money. So I think that since it's in the DNA of Red Hat, it was the barrier was much lower for Red Hat than any other company who wanted to jump in.
That makes a lot of sense as well. So can you tell us a little bit about the projects you've been working on in the Docker ecosystem? So can you explain what GearDeep is to our audience for people who don't know it yet?
Sure. When we started working with Docker, you know, one of the things that matters a lot to Red Hat and to Fedora and the upstream communities is systemd. You know, systemd was a big project that's been, you know, it's attracted a certain share of controversy, just like Docker has from the administration space. And our first approach was we really wanted to tie the process management in Docker much more closely to the operating system and start working through, you know, how over time Docker and the operating system can be much more closely coupled. And so we started with the idea of integrating Docker with systemd and a little bit more deeply than some of the others were doing at the time. And as well, from an OpenShift perspective, we were looking at how we could build an orchestration endpoint that made it easy for people to set up and run containers at scale, to take advantage of the things that we knew worked and didn't work with OpenShift as it is today, and say, let's put together some base ideas that allow us to have a simple, easy-to-use orchestration endpoint that can manage Docker containers with systemd. And then the next step after that was, well, we want to make it easy for administrators to be able to look at a system and say, here's all the containers that are running. And because of the integration with systemd, that did necessitate a little bit of, you know, a set of extra tools around the Docker runtime. And really our direction all along has been, we want to make sure that Docker as a project is integrated with systemd. And GearDeep was a very convenient way for us to tackle a number of these at the same time. And there's people using GearDeep to integrate systemd and Docker. There's people using it to do simple deploys where you can sketch out, you know, these containers relate to these containers. And we wanted to explore a lot of those ideas. And now as we've been evolving, you know, our OpenShift 3 plans with Google's Kubernetes project, it became obvious to us that we wanted to take GearDeep the next step and start integrating the ideas and the pieces of that into OpenShift 3, which, you know, we're starting to pivot around now.
Got it. And so GearDeep, like, let me just reflect back and tell me if I'm off here, but GearDeep is a way for people to stitch together the networking and orchestration parts of Linux or of Docker containers, so that no matter which host they run on, they can talk to each other. Is that kind of what GearDeep does?
Yeah, at the time, you know, at the time we started GearDeep, we really had, there'd been a lot of discussion with various folks in the upstream Docker community about where we wanted to take the idea of links. And a core concept with Docker is that your software doesn't necessarily need to know about the topology of the applications it's running with. And you know, one of the Docker patterns, the ambassador pattern, is about running a container that helps you talk to another machine. I think to us, it was really important to try and prototype and work through the ideas for making it so that a container doesn't need to know where the other containers in its network are. So if I'm running three MongoDB containers on my local system, they can set up and form a replica set, just like if those three machines were running on a remote cluster. So working through some of the abstractions that we could use in the operating system to make that easy. And a lot of those concepts are things that are being discussed now. We've been involved in the upstream Docker community on the Lynx V2 work, and there's been a lot of discussion about the different ways that people will be able to integrate into the next versions of Docker that will allow containers to run identically on a local system as they do in a large network cluster, making it so that containers don't have to know about where they're running.
Got it. So GearD does some orchestration, but another project that you're a contributor to is Kubernetes, and that also does orchestration. So what for people who don't know what Kubernetes is, can you explain Kubernetes and then explain how GearD is different than Kubernetes?
Sure. So Kubernetes is Google's is an open sourcing of some ideas Google's been kicking around for a while around how to effectively design and run containerized applications at scale. So Google has a lot of experience with containers. They've been doing it for 10 years. Pretty much everything at Google runs inside of a container. Even their VMs run inside of containers. And so when Google released Kubernetes, almost immediately we saw a lot of the potential in the ideas that they were promoting, the design model and the patterns that they were advocating resonated very deeply with us. And so we had already kind of been thinking about how in the next generation of OpenShift, how we wanted to address problems like scheduling and ensuring that systems were more stateless and that the system had even more powerful auto-healing capabilities and the ability to transparently react to things like network failures. And as we lined up a lot of those ideas, we saw that there was a really big crossover between what Kubernetes was advocating and where we wanted to go. GearD as a project was really about offering an orchestration endpoint. And at the time, there was really an absence of orchestration endpoints in the open source community around Docker. There was the Docker API itself. And as I mentioned, with integration with systemd, we needed to tie those two together. And so where we want to go with GearD in the Kubernetes world is Kubernetes, in a sense, can handle container management at a large scale. And Kubernetes has a concept on each of the hosts that takes and applies the necessary configuration. And we want to weave the pieces of Kubernetes of GearD that we really believe strongly in integration with systemd, some of the additional linking capabilities directly into Kubernetes, and then keep the administrative experience around GearD whole so that people can deploy applications using GearD directly into Kubernetes, that some of these additional capabilities that we were prototyping in GearD would be part of that as well. So we really see it as just an evolution of GearD, and Kubernetes excites us because we think that the patterns that they've chosen really do match with the patterns that sooner or later everybody in the software world is going to need to understand. The idea of containerization underlying everything, potentially even the VMs that people run containers in themselves.
Got it. It's really exciting stuff that this is all about. And when I was building Panamax, one of the things I always wanted to do in the Docker ecosystem was really make adoption of these complex and powerful tools easier. I know you've just got your hands on the Panamax project, but one of my personal goals was always to make it something that could have drivers for Kubernetes, drivers for GearD, adopt technology, and be a place that developers could come and deploy templates and use best practices without having to really dig deep and figure out exactly how all of those things work. Do you think that this is the direction that things are going with Panamax, and are you excited to do more with Panamax with Red Hat?
Yeah, I think it's such an exciting time in technology, especially around the Docker ecosystem, because I think everyone sees the needs, and there's great projects out there like Panamax and a number of other projects where we all want to solve those problems. And having easy and powerful ways of integrating these simple experiences so that people have the flexibility to choose the tools they want, or to begin with certain tools and then graduate into others. The Panamax patterns are great patterns that really apply to the vast majority of experience. And I certainly expect that everyone in the ecosystem is going to continue to iterate, and we will always, we really want to have a community of people that can mix and match pieces of experience to bring those together. So, you know, great examples out there like the Fig and the Orchid teams, you know, have become part of Docker, but those guys really define some of that initial first step of deploying sets of containers. And as soon as containers move off a single host, then you start seeing the need to do deeper integrations, build flows, the amazing work that the Quay.io guys have done around image repositories. There's so much excitement in the ecosystem, the work that Flynn and Deus and CoreOS are doing around Docker, that I think it's great because I don't think that it's just one technology or one stack or one solution. And you know, our goal, I think, with OpenShift has always been that we want to build the broadest possible software ecosystem to make developers' lives easier and to make administrators' lives easier. And so all of these tools, at the end of the day, come together to help do that.
Yeah, well, I really, really am excited. I'm super crossing my fingers, hoping that, that people in the OpenShift community will create an OpenShift Origins template for Panamax so that anybody can deploy OpenShift using any Panamax system. That would just be a dream for me. So if anybody out there is listening and ambitious and wants to figure that out, I'm really, that's one of the top things I'm looking forward to seeing out of the ecosystem. So what do you guys think of the future of platform as a service? Where is platform as a service going? Let's look forward a few years. What's changed? What's different? What are the trends that are the changing tides in platform as a service that you guys are spotting today?
Okay. This is partly from my industry experience and also like the 30,000 feet view, which I still maintain. The platform as a service is definitely changing from the initial days. If you were selling PaaS in 2010, I think today's PaaS is drastically different from that. Like now the focus is more on containers and the significant part of which goes to Docker ecosystem. And also, like people understand the value of PaaS, but they also want to ensure that they are not locked in. Lock-in comes not just to avoid the vendor lock-in, but also if you want to future-proof your platform and future-proof your organization, you need to have loosely coupled systems with easy portability to achieve that. I think smart vendors are realizing that and going in that direction. And I think this is where the platform as a service will move forward in the coming years. We will essentially help organizations build a platform that that is also future-proof. I think containers are playing a major role there. Clayton, you can add your wisdom there, but this is my view from 30K.
I would echo that. I mean, the idea of one of the things that containerized applications depend on is a rich set of abstractions that let people couple software together. So, you know, networks, you know, IP-based networks, DNS, proxies, load balancer. These are all tools that we've had for you know, for many years. And bringing those into today's flexible environment so that you can do, you know, transparent load balancing without a service even knowing that it's being load balanced, so that containers can run locally or remotely. Building containerized applications that are only grossly aware of the locations they're running. They can run across data centers when the latency is acceptable, or they can run on a local machine when they're testing something out. I think that as those patterns start to develop, that having a community that's building around those patterns, like things like Panamax and Fig and Docker especially, the idea of having those patterns in place helps everyone. It helps people who are working on legacy applications move forward. It helps people who are building the latest and greatest thing move forward. It helps people who want to distribute software, who want to distribute their database or their whiz-bang appliance out to tens of thousands of people all over the world. And that's only made it stronger. And then on the other side of it, it's how infrastructure and platform are coming together. So you can start to see this with projects and OpenStack. OpenStack has done a great job of being an open way to build for a lot of different companies and a lot of different contributors to come together and abstract hardware and abstract the flexibility of networks. And I think one of the things that we'll see coming out of the container revolution really gets back to that core idea that at the end of the day, the vast majority of software that runs on a network doesn't really need to know about the details of the software it's running on, where it's running, and how how those services are being provided. And so things like Kubernetes and the core concepts of running software in containers really lets us get all the way down to the bottom of the stack and build the next 20 or 30 years of software, where we have these units that we can compose and move flexibly. It's a really exciting time. You know, OpenStack's going to grow more powerful. Hopefully, with Kubernetes, we can embrace and build out a way of looking at containerized software that can cross data centers and can cross organizational boundaries, and then bring that all the way back down to what does it matter to an end user and an administrator with OpenShift.
Yeah, in this context, I also want to highlight the trend of microservices. And I think containers are well suited for that microservice architecture. And if the platform offers that atomic unit of container in a more standardized way like Docker, I think that is well suited for embracing the microservice architecture. And if there is any organization wanting to sort of embrace microservices, I think Docker-based containers is the right way to do it. And the platform that supports Docker will be ideal for that.
Yeah, it's funny because it's funny you mentioned that because when I wrote the Programming for Platform as a Service book for O'Reilly, I wrote a lot about how do you write microservices for platform as a service. But at the time, Docker didn't exist yet. So I wrote the book before Docker. Now Docker seems to be making the renaissance of microservices even more pronounced. So it's really interesting to see that becoming even more important. With containers. I think the trend started with platform as a service, with Heroku, with 12-factor applications, but I think it's really getting the microservices revolution is definitely something I see as on the forefront of technology.
Yeah, and also like as an industry analyst in the past, I see the standardization as a key for ensuring that microservices are implemented right. So if you use a standardized container like Docker, probably it's the best way to approach the microservices architecture than getting locked into some kind of non-standard containers available in the market.
Yeah, and microservices are a great example of the things that microservices need, regardless of whether it's a microservice being one container or 100 microservices running in a container, is they all need logging. They all need some sort of statistics, metrics, and monitoring capabilities. They need to be able to flexibly be placed, be able to grow or shrink as need demands. They need to be load balanced, or they need to have access to external networks. They want to register on DNS so that other services can find them. So all of those core capabilities that exist in various ways in the community today, I think that the real next focus for platform is going to be bringing these fungible assets together in a way that you know, you can take advantage of a load balancer without ever knowing the actual implementation of it. So the services don't have to care any more than an end user has to care that there's a load balancer between them and the end service.
Why would a end developer, somebody, you know, a consumer that's trying to build containerized applications, why would they choose OpenShift or GearD over just using Docker containers themselves and building it all from scratch?
So I can offer certainly a perspective on this that based on what we've seen with, as I alluded to before, about there's a large percentage of people out there who've never heard of platform as a service. They've never seen Docker. Developers in the enterprise world, even developers in the open source world, who these are new concepts to them. And I think Docker is a powerful tool, and I don't think it's enough. For one thing, it doesn't run, if you're doing development on Mac or Windows, you can use boot to Docker, but you may not be able to get the full experience that you want there. As these tools grow, as the flexibility grows for Windows and Mac developers, I absolutely believe that more people will use Docker directly. But I think we're in an interesting time where for an application developer or someone who wants to publish code, Docker provides flexibility to them, but do they have to know about it right off the bat? And offering services and tools on top of Docker and ways of thinking about Docker, things like Panamax, things like Fig, things like GearD, it's about giving developers an easy way into the Docker ecosystem. And when they need that flexibility, when they need the power or the deep customization that a Docker container offers you, the ability to install new packages or rewrite config files, that is all there for their offering, but they don't have to start it there. And I think that that's just a natural progression of software, that there'll always be a need to bring people slowly into the future so that they can accommodate themselves and they can be productive from day one without depending on or even knowing the Docker is running underneath them.
Yeah, historically speaking, higher levels of abstraction always is the right way to approach doing your IT. It really plays a role in increasing the productivity inside your organization. So I think usually you have to see this in that context, how virtualization helped, how cloud helped. So OpenShift is coming at a higher level of abstraction, and it's going to help organization increase their productivity and use the free resources for further innovation.
And to add one more point, I think at the end of the day, users and administrators and folks who cross both of those worlds in DevOps, everybody wants a tool that gives them an upfront experience that's very simple, and then they want the depth to be able to solve their problems. And OpenShift has always been about trying to offer both that simple initial experience and the depth for administrators, both for technology they're comfortable with, but technology that they can customize and tune. And I think we'll see this play out with Docker and with every technology that comes out of the Docker ecosystem.
Very cool. So before we go, tell us a little bit, give us some hints, some directions. What's next for OpenShift? What's the future of OpenShift holding?
So right now, V3 is the release code name, and 3.0 refers to the architecture. The OpenShift origin repos are out there on GitHub. It's pretty spare right now. We're based around Kubernetes, and we're trying to simplify the Kubernetes install experience and initial setup. But our goal over the next few months and a year is to really build out all of the technologies, both on top of Kubernetes and in Kubernetes, that will allow all of these kinds of concepts that people in the Docker community need or want to use outside of there. OpenShift, the product, and OpenShift Online are both on that path where we really want to bring Docker to end users, to let people use Docker images directly, but also to fit those into higher level flows. And so we're really excited to be part of Kubernetes and to be part of the Docker ecosystems, the folks that are contributing there, some of the people we have who are maintainers on both of those projects. Working forward, we're really excited to see people involved in those communities and being able to, as Red Hat has always done, take the best out of those communities and expose them for everybody to help make it easier for people to go do and accomplish the things they need to do at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'm going to approach this from a different angle. Historically, in technology, open source was considered as something that comes in the aftermath and commoditizing the space. But for the first time in the history of technology, open source is leading innovation, and Red Hat and OpenShift are part of that bleeding edge innovation. So I think we are very proud of that, and I'm pretty confident that we are going to solve the problems of the modern day technology which our customers face and make it seamless for them. So we are pretty excited about where everything is headed.
Well, I'm really excited too. I think this is really cool, and I appreciate you guys taking some time and giving us some vision for the future of technology. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for listening to the CenturyLink Labs podcast with Lucas Carlson. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, CenturyLinkLabs.com, to your friends and colleagues. Be sure to check out our archive section on our website for previous podcasts. This has been a CenturyLink production. Join us next time for another edition of the CenturyLink Labs podcast.